Assessment for Learning in Waldorf Classrooms. How Waldorf Teachers Measure Student Progress Toward Lifelong Learning Goals by Sarah Saborsky and Helen Ann Ireland. Read by Michael Whitry. Forward. Democracy has to be born anew every generation, and education is its midwife. John Dewey. New measures of accountability and assessment have gripped the very souls of teachers, academics, and the American public since the fearful warnings published in A Nation at Risk in 1983, the subsequent rollout of federal programs, No Child Left Behind in 2002, and the more recent Race to the Top in 2009. Universal standards, high-stakes testing, and value-added modeling are all components of what educational researcher Armine Beardsley, 2014, calls a measure and punish theory of change, page 14, where it is imagined that utopian outcomes are possible if the right standards are in place, the right tests are used to measure the achievement of those standards, and teachers and administrative personnel are rewarded or punished when students either achieve adequate test scores or do not. Enter this book, Assessment for Learning in Waldorf Classrooms by Sarah Saborsky and Helen Ann Ireland. Here, two scholars provide a detailed and alternative view to the measure and punish scenario in a research project that focuses on the assessment of practices of teachers in independent American Waldorf schools. This in-depth qualitative research describes how 9 Waldorf teachers implement learner-centered assessment and how their schools support such practices. Detailed vignettes are included that show how academic, social, motivational, and arts-integrated curricula can be assessed authentically. It is important to note that the learner-centered practices used by teachers in Waldorf schools are not entirely new or exclusive to Waldorf practitioners. In fact, in the not-so-distant past, most teachers in the United States were trusted to use observations, student portfolios, performance assessments, and student self-assessments to understand who their students were, what they needed, and what learning has been accomplished. What Saborsky and Ireland show us, however, is that these practices can still be encouraged and sustained in a supportive environment that not only assures accountability, but also maintains respect for the humanity of the teachers and students involved. The authors suggest the probability of improved student learning outcomes is a consequence of using learner-centered assessment practices. They show how ongoing classroom assessments embedded in curriculum and carried out by knowledgeable, supported teachers may help to promote deeper student learning and growth than the punishment model. This research is also a validation of what happens when groups of colleagues are trusted and supported to work together to professionally determine academic standards and assessment tools for the community in which they work and teach. This is an important book for teachers, administrators, and policymakers in all schools. Saborsky and Ireland are to be commended for writing an informative, accessible, and engaging account of their research on the assessment methods in Waldorf schools. It focuses on the work of contemporary American Waldorf elementary teachers in a way that has not, to my knowledge, been done before. In addition, the authors weave Waldorf practice together with salient strands of mainstream research on school improvement and reform, such as backwards planning and the promise of small schools. Most important, perhaps, is that Saborsky and Ireland remind us that fundamental questions about the purpose of education are driving today's assessment strategies. While the architects of the measure and punish theory of change will argue that the goal of education is to create a workforce for the global economy, Waldorf and other progressive educators are more broadly concerned with the education of human beings who are able to think, innovate, and create in community, an essential skill in an ever-changing world striving toward more democratic and sustainable ways of living. The book shows us how assessment for learning that is based on the support and continued development of teachers, students, and institutions is intended to work. Assessment for learning turns away from the scaled-up, abstracted test scores demanded by external bureaucracies to the scaled-down student-teacher relationships that are at the heart of education in a true democracy. That is what authentic assessment is all about. Linda Williams, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of Teacher Education, College of Education, Eastern Michigan University, Ypsilanti, Michigan. Preface. When the Director of Outreach and Development of the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America, OSNA, approached us about a research project focused on Waldorf methods of assessments, neither of us hesitated a moment. OSNA had been participating in public forums and conferences where people were asking questions and sometimes had misconceptions about Waldorf methods, especially in the area of student assessment. Those questions and the ongoing public clamor for improvement in educational outcomes in public schools prompted OSNA to undertake the case studies that we report in this book. The aim of the book is to help educators and others outside the Waldorf movement to understand Waldorf education. Published Waldorf literature does a great job of explaining the foundations, teaching principles, and assessment practices. However, this literature tends to circulate mainly among people already connected as teachers, parents, or students. What was needed was an account of Waldorf methods in a framework and with the terms used and understood by non-Waldorf education professionals. What would be useful to education professionals unacquainted with Waldorf pedagogy would be a kind of translation. For example, what exactly do Waldorf teachers mean by age appropriate? What do Waldorf teachers actually do in their classrooms? How exactly do they make student assessments? OSNA asked us to design a research project around these and other questions and to present the findings in a monograph. We agreed, partly because we wanted to support OSNA's outreach to the general public and mainstream educators to make Waldorf education better understood. But also, our combined experience and backgrounds seemed ideal for the project. One of us, Szaborski, had training in qualitative social research while earning a PhD in cultural anthroposophy at the University of Alabama. The other, Ireland, had been a Waldorf class teacher for 20 years and was enrolled in a PhD program in education research, policy, and administration at the University of Massachusetts. Both of us came to Waldorf education first as parents looking for the right school for our children, and both of us have remained connected in different capacities over several decades. We continue to be impressed with the age-appropriate holistic Waldorf approach that begins by cultivating the imaginative forces of younger children and ends in Waldorf high schools with rigorous academic training. We continue to admire how all the arts are woven into the academic curriculum. We are grateful for the way Waldorf schooling celebrates different cultures, both in curricular content and through Waldorf schools' locations around the world. Because of this, it seems to us that Waldorf education is a meaningful pathway toward peace and social renewal. In the past two decades, Waldorf schools have changed in some noteworthy ways. There are stricter requirements for membership in OSNA. Both new and established Waldorf schools must meet robust criteria in regard to facilities, financial stabilities, standards for student learning, and rigorous teacher evaluation systems. The special preparation required of prospective Waldorf teachers has been systematized and is offered by some 14 teacher education centers. Schools are still faculty run, but most now have administrative staffs to assist teachers with public outreach, fundraising, accounting, human resources, accreditation, and enrollment. These are positive changes and are well-advised responses to the rapid growth of Waldorf education in this country. The number of Waldorf schools has doubled in the past two decades, leading to a larger public profile, greater media attention, and consequently more urgent need for accurate information. We can now offer non-Waldorf educators and others interested in the topics we address a description based on 9 case studies of the Waldorf class teachers' repertoire of assessment strategies, as well as a full account of the internal processes in 3 OSNA-accredited Waldorf schools aimed at ensuring teacher and school accountability. It will, we hope, help to avert those misunderstandings that often come with the greater public exposure. We think it is important to include all perspectives in today's debate on education reform, including those of independent education, and especially one as divergent as Waldorf education is from mainstream public policy in regard to assessment. We believe this account, based as it is on systematic gathering of data, provides independent Waldorf education with firm ground on which to take part in today's discussions of how to ensure the best learning outcomes. We want to acknowledge the cooperation of the 9 teachers and 3 schools whose participation made this project possible, especially the teachers whose names we have withheld. We are immensely grateful for their patience, their conscientious and thoughtful way of responding to our often repetitious questions, and their generosity in giving their time in the midst of a busy teaching schedule. We are thankful to the schools for supporting our work by making available their standards, student report forms, and documents pertaining to teacher evaluation systems. Most of all, we thank our mentor and project coordinator, Patrice Maynard. As OSNA's leader for outreach and development, she launched the project, anchored it to the Research Institute for Waldorf Education, and has been at all stages an invaluable source of encouragement as well as accurate information about Waldorf education. She never at any point interfered in the conduct of the research or tried to influence our interpretation of the findings. Finally, we acknowledge with gratitude the financial support of the Waldorf Educational Foundation, whose funding made the research and writing possible. WEF has always been generous in supporting OSNA's work in public outreach, especially efforts to build bridges with non-Waldorf educators. We need good bridges because we are all in agreement in wanting the best for our children, though we may differ about what that consists of or how to bring it about. We claim an emic position in presenting the data of the case studies. We were part of the community that we studied, but we tried to remain open to observing and recording what we heard and saw, separate from any bias, and what we documented was in fact actual teaching and assessing. If Waldorf education is presented in a positive light, it is because we have seen firsthand so many capable and effective teachers and know so many productive, well-adjusted, competent, and socially involved graduates of Waldorf schools. Where our personal endorsement of Waldorf education affects the presentation, we try to clearly acknowledge this in a given piece of writing. Not everyone will agree with our positive view. Some non-Waldorf educators may find Waldorf terminology and concepts too fluid and unclear, lacking in precision and rigor. Some will disagree with the Waldorf view of the stages of child development and the pedagogical principles implied by those stages. And some may shy away from the notion that teachers should be concerned with and evaluate the development of a student's aesthetic feelings, social relationships, or moral sensibilities. But it is not our intention to promote Waldorf methods over the other ways of teaching and assessing. Rather, we would like to think that this book can help inspire those non-Waldorf teachers who, burdened with requirements for standardized testing, seek affirmation of assessment alternatives. We hope it will support those in the education community who are urging that assessments be curriculum embedded, individualized, and solely in the hands of teachers who are held to high professional teaching standards. We hope especially to strengthen the position of all who argue that the purpose of student assessment is not grading or ranking, but encouragement along a path of lifelong learning. Chapter 1, Waldorf Education and Education Reform. In this book, we present research undertaken in order to document how teachers in independent Waldorf elementary schools set learning goals and evaluate their students' progress toward meeting those goals. The Waldorf approach to assessment contrasts strikingly with the public policy view in the current debate on education reform, which favors assessment and accountability with norm-referenced high-stakes standardized testing. The view of Waldorf educators is that assessments that are designed for the purpose of further learning, that are comprehensive of a range of abilities, and that are embedded in the daily classroom curriculum, give a more holistic and therefore more accurate picture of a child's attainments. This approach is based on a particular conception of the stages of child development that informs the Waldorf curriculum, and it reflects a humanistic understanding of the goal of education that differs from public policy formulations focused on economic success. High-stakes, standardized testing currently dominates the thinking of public policymakers and the general public. It has become dogma that mandatory testing is the only possible way to assess students' learning, teachers' teaching, and the school's performance in relation to whatever standards are official in any given case. In contrast, none of the 9 teachers who participated in the case studies reported here in Part 2 used a standardized or externally made test during the 5 months that their teaching and assessment methods were documented, nor did such tests figure in their later plans. Instead, they drew on a time-tested repertoire of classroom assessment strategies, most of which are comparable to the alternative methods now advocated by many professionals in the field of education. The relevance of Waldorf perspective. The researchers think that this study and its related discussions of accountability and teacher evaluation in independent Waldorf education will enable education professionals outside the Waldorf movement to better understand Waldorf methods. Better understanding will make it possible for the Waldorf perspective to be included in the long-standing debate on how to improve educational outcomes. The Waldorf perspective is relevant to discussions of several particular areas at the forefront of education reform, such as how to conduct more comprehensive and individualized assessment of capabilities important for learning beyond the measuring of math and reading skills. Assessment literacy for teachers, that is, upgrading their skills to include the conducting of alternative assessments. The importance of student-teacher and student-peer relationships for motivation and learning. A different understanding of the purposes of assessment. How to evaluate teachers in a way that leads to improved teaching rather than to rewards and penalties. And how to hold teachers and schools accountable for doing their job without external measures. Waldorf Education, founded by Rudolf Steiner in Germany in 1919, is independent and non-sectarian, offering a developmental, age-appropriate, experiential curriculum integrating academic subjects, practical activities, and the arts for students from preschool through 12th grade. The teaching faculties in Waldorf schools that are accredited by the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America, ASNA, are responsible for administration and all pedagogical matters, including the setting of student learning standards, implementation of the Waldorf curriculum, frequency and formats of student assessments, mentoring and evaluation of teachers, and accountability to students, families, and the communities served by the schools. The Waldorf movement is undergoing rapid growth. In North America today, there are 250 established and developing Waldorf schools and 14 Waldorf teacher education programs. Worldwide, there are some 900 schools in 83 countries. When he established the first Waldorf school for the children of factory workers in Germany in 1919, Steiner's view was that every child deserves a world-class education, the kind of education that at the time was available only to the wealthiest families. He wanted schooling to provide a pathway for every child to fulfill his individual potential and at the same time for education to be a source of social renewal. Like some critics of the current fixation on accountability exclusively through standardized testing, Waldorf educators support Steiner's position that education is a cultural activity and as such must be independent of political and economic influence. Accordingly, they maintain that standards, curriculum, accountability, and assessment should be in the hands of professional teachers who carry the day-to-day responsibility for the schools they teach in and the children they teach. The fact that Waldorf schools are independent is not a reason to exclude the Waldorf perspective from the debate on public education reform. Given the urgency of finding solutions, a public-private partnership with the exchange of best practices is sensible. Moreover, to judge from the scholarly literature on alternative assessment, many teaching methods and assessment strategies that are hallmarks of Waldorf pedagogy have been and continue to be used in non-Waldorf settings. As government-mandated standardized testing has escalated, many education professionals, among them respected scholars, have been proposing a variety of effective, feasible assessment alternatives with, however, negligible impact on public policy. According to Ravitch, 2010, the heavy and inappropriate influence of the corporate business sector and certain large foundations on education panels and think tanks is responsible for the current disconnection between the recommendations of educators and the actual public policy with its promotion of market-based reforms, pages 69 and 200. What we report here can be taken as suggestive of what teachers who are free of that influence might be able to accomplish. As we will show, the Waldorf approach accords well with recommendations coming from scholars in the fields of education and psychology aimed at improving educational outcomes. The Waldorf experience validates the direction of many of these recommendations. For example, advocacy for more comprehensive, beyond cognitive skills, assessments, with greater reliance on performance rather than written test assessments. Waldorf teachers are trained to design and implement these more comprehensive kinds of assessments. They know how to effectively integrate strategies like group projects, student self-assessment, and artistic work into their teaching. They understand the importance of a healthy social classroom dynamic that supports learning and the pedagogical benefits of a close teacher-student personal relationship based on mutual trust. Chapter 1, Part 2. Like some of the critics of the current fixation on accountability exclusively through standardized testing, Waldorf educators support Steiner's position that education is a cultural activity and as such must be independent of political and economic influence. Accordingly, they maintain that standards, curriculum, accountability, and assessment should be in the hands of professional teachers who carry the day-to-day responsibility for the schools they teach in and the children they teach. The fact that Waldorf schools are independent is not a reason to exclude the Waldorf perspective from the debate on public education reform. Given the urgency of finding solutions, a public-private partnership with exchange of best practices is sensible. Moreover, to judge from the scholarly literature on alternative assessment, many teaching methods and assessment strategies that are hallmarks of Waldorf pedagogy have been and continue to be used in non-Waldorf settings. As government-mandated standardized testing has escalated, many educated professionals, among them respected scholars, have been proposing a variety of effective, feasible assessment alternatives with, however, negligible impact on public policy. According to Ravitch, 2010, the heavy and inappropriate influence of the corporate business sector and certain large foundation on educational panels and think tanks is responsible for the current disconnection between the recommendation of educators and actual public policy with its promotion of market-based reforms, pages 69 and 200. What we report here can be taken as suggestive of what teachers who are free of that influence might be able to accomplish. As we will show, the Waldorf approach accords well with the recommendations coming from scholars in the fields of education and psychology aimed at improving educational outcomes. The Waldorf experience validates the direction of many of these recommendations. For example, advocacy for more comprehensive, beyond cognitive skills, assessments, and greater reliance on performance rather than written test assessments. Waldorf teachers are trained to design and implement these more comprehensive kinds of assessments. They know how to effectively integrate strategies like group projects, student self-assessment, and artistic work into their teaching. They understand the importance of a healthy social classroom dynamic that supports learning and the pedagogical benefits of a close teacher-student personal relationship based on mutual trust. What is the purpose of education? The direction taken by educators seeking appropriate and effective ways to measure student learning, the central concern in today's debate, will depend, to begin with, on what they understand as the purpose of education. Whom are we educating, and what is an education for? What are we assessing, and why? Whoever works with these questions must confront the seemingly conflicting needs of the individual and the society. That is, every human being is unique, but at the same time participates in communities, societies, and nowadays, a world requiring common knowledge, skills, understandings, and values. No two children are exactly alike, and each has specific individual needs and talents. At the same time, all children, whether born in Uganda or America, go through similar stages in their development. All deserve an education enabling them to fully realize not only their individual potential, but also the goal of becoming useful citizens in a shared world. We assume that most educators would agree, therefore, that the goal of education is twofold at its core: to bring out the best in the individual and help the individual become a citizen in society, to build a common understanding and shared base of knowledge while at the same time sparking individual aspirations for its students. Education must meet these two criteria simultaneously in order to be successful. We would say that, given this task, educators must find a balance between what in the curriculum needs to be standard and what must be flexible to allow for creative teaching, between teaching that addresses common goals and teaching that addresses the needs and talents of the individual. However, despite any such agreement, assumed or real. The two disparate approaches noted above for improving educational outcomes dominate today's debate. The public policy approach focused on testing on the one hand, and diverse proposals by education scholars for alternatives to testing on the other. Both approaches have roots in the history of education reform. On the one hand, a long-standing trend toward administrative efficiency has led to a one-size-fits-all approach to educating students. On the other hand, are those education scholars, going back to Dewey, 1938 to 1997, who argued that richer curricula, experiential learning, and multidimensional individualized assessment rather than testing will result in better learning outcomes. Both these approaches have helped to shape the discussion, policy, and practice of education in the United States since the beginning of the 20th century. Public education and the social efficiency model. Administrative progressives in the early part of the 20th century laid the ground for today's public policy approach. Educators like Edward Thorndike and Elwood Cubberley wanted to make education efficient and create tracks that directed young people toward a place in society based on IQ scores and other tests. Labarre, 2010, calls this the social efficiency model of education, wherein young people are positioned in society by virtue of their birth, talents, and social standing. Page 94. Another aspect of the social efficiency model is its view of learning and assessment as two separate activities. First, students acquire information and skills. Later, teachers or some outside authority make assessments to measure that acquisition. Shepherd, 2000, argues that this model fails to support good learning outcomes. She traces the historical development of this paradigm, acquisition of knowledge followed by assessment of acquisition, through its manifestations in behaviorism, theories about social efficiency, and scientific measurement, a development culminating today in bias among educators at all levels against subjective assessments and powerful beliefs held by teachers about the need for objectivity attainable only by separate assessment of specific instructional goals, pages 4-6. In contrast to theories about knowledge acquisition as the accumulation of information, her framework acknowledges new insights from cognition theory, especially that learning is an active process of mental construction and sense-making. Page 6. Education, influenced by the social efficiency model, has been likened to assembly line production by Sir Ken Robinson, 2007, in his numerous TED Talks on creativity in education. He argues that the one-size-fits-all approach that is typical of schools fails to address the creative potential that each student has to offer. We are sketching here the broad trends, and in fairness must note that many teachers inside their classrooms resist today's assembly line prescriptions for teaching. Many teachers and principals are using their creativity to work within a system that could otherwise be characterized as stultifying. In public education in the United States, the social efficiency approach has evolved in today's reliance on standardized tests. The newest developments in federal and state-level education policy confirm that standardized testing has captured the imagination of public policymakers and the general public. Every step forward in public policy entails more testing. The federal response to diminishing returns from testing mandated by the No Child Left Behind legislation, for example, was a huge funding authorization for more sophisticated standardized tests to be given more frequently. Dillon, 2010, Dillon, 2012, WHO, 2011, U.S. Department of Education, 2010B, 2010, see also FAIR Test, 2013. The public perception that a top-down model of imposed standardized testing is the only effective way to measure students' learning and evaluate teachers' performance seems unshakable. This perception is continually reinforced by the work of think tanks, foundations that are focused on education reform, and pronouncements and initiatives by policymakers at all levels. For example, Ravitch, 2010, pages 200 and 219, U.S. Department of Education, 2010A, 2010B, 2012. The scholar's critique of testing. Many education professionals question the trustworthiness of standardized tests, pointing out their narrow focus and consequent limited usefulness for assessing the full scope of a student's capacities and knowledge, or for pointing to individual gaps in understanding. Among them are Bassett, 2005, Carey, 2008, Nichols and Berliner, 2007, Ravitch, 2010, Shepard, 2000, Stiggins, 2002, and Wiggins, 1990-1998. Finding effective alternatives to standardized testing of students is critical because test results are used not only for measuring students' learning, but also as a basis of rewards and penalties for teachers and schools. Though they can be useful for identifying problems and gaps, such tests are widely recognized as unfair, unreliable, and counterproductive of learning. For example, Ravitch, 2010, pages 152 to 154. Some scholars have challenged standardized tests from the standpoint of equity, calling attention to biases that make their results invalid, unreliable, or unfair for measuring abilities of, especially minority students. For example, Erasian, 2005, pages 113 to 115, Au, 2009, Estrin, 1993, Hilliard and Amankwatia, 2003, Rothman, 1994. Shepard, 2000, notes the well-known pervasive negative effects of externally imposed testing programs on teaching and learning, including indications of decreases in student understanding and of greater concern of de-skilling and deprofessionalization of teachers. High-stakes standardized tests are rarely educative, that is, supportive of further learning, because they provide no feedback to students, Wiggins, 1998. Tests are poor at measuring understanding, which itself compromises a range of cognitive and affective abilities, Darling, Hammond, and others, 2008, Wiggins and McTighe, 2005. Nonetheless, some scholars advocating alternative methods of assessment assume that non-test assessments still need to be confirmed by standardized norm reference tests made by subject experts. For example, those provided by textbook publishers or computer modules in math and reading. Most also accept additional testing as mandated by federal legislation. The position of Waldorf educators, Mitchell, Gerwin, Schuberth, Mancini, and Hofrichter, 2008, is unequivocally against all standardized testing at the elementary school level, for reasons that will become clear as we proceed. They make the point, among others, that standardized tests cannot measure development of individual character traits and dispositions critical for learning and retention, such as diligence, interest and enthusiasm, initiative and resolve, creative and independent thinking, and collaborative skills. The search for alternative methods of assessment. Disillusionment with standardized testing has accelerated a long-standing and widespread search for better methods of assessing student learning, led by scholars continuing the second approach noted above. Education professionals and even some public policymakers are calling for alternative assessments, defined by Carey, 2008, as anything other than tests, and usually including performance assessments, problem-based assessments, student self-assessment, and various forms of classroom assessment aimed at supporting multiple and individual learning styles. An extensive and growing body of scholarly literature endorses well-planned instructional, that is, classroom, assessments as most likely to provide the fairest, most valid, and most reliable assessment. That is, Anderson, 2003, Carey, 2008, Goodman and Carey, 2004, McMillan, 2006, Shepard, 2000, Stiggins, 2001, 2002. And a large and growing number of studies explore the effectiveness of performance assessments, that is, assessments conducted while students are engaged in a learning task, as tools for learning as well for assessment, per se. That is, Brualdi, 1998A, Doan, Rice and Zakos, 2006, Marzano and Kendall, 2007, McTighe and Ferrara, 2011, Marins, 1992, Moscow, 2003, Wiggins, 1998, Wolf and Reardon, 1996. With calls for authentic assessment, Tombari and Borick, 1999, Wiggins, 1990, ubiquitous assessment, Goodman and Carey, 2004, and more coherent, Herman, 2010, approaches to assessment, educators acknowledge the importance of more comprehensive assessments that would include capabilities like problem solving and collaboration, and would assess literacy and competence in other subjects besides math and reading, the focus of most standardized tests. The legislative agenda of the Educational Leadership Organization, ASCD, whose membership is mainly teachers, urges education reform to meet the needs of the whole child, and assessment that provides a more comprehensive picture of student achievement through multiple measures, ASCD 2012. Outside of academia, some organizations are heralding methods of assessment that entail sophisticated but still standardized measures, along with increased use of technology in the classroom. EdUtopia, the website of the George Lucas Foundation, advocates performance-based, comprehensive assessment of the whole student, with games, team projects, class presentations, portfolios, and other activities. It claims an important role for computers and other technology in classrooms and better standardized tests for assessment. Another example is Partnership for 21st Century Skills, which promotes toolkits and other resources, including high-quality standardized tests for measuring compliance with common state standards. Their model assumes and endorses centralized planning with state-mandated standards and state implementation of their assessments. We look more closely at P21 in Chapter 7. The educative assessments advocated by Wiggins, 1998, and Wiggins and McTighe, 2005, are curriculum-embedded assessments that give students personalized, individual feedback based on what was taught in the classroom, how well the students understand the concepts, and where they are on a continuum of mastery. This also gives the teacher immediate feedback, which can help her modify the lessons as needed. Other educators cite the need for models, real cases, of effective learning-centered, curriculum-embedded, more individualized, and comprehensive assessments. For example, Black, Harrison, Lee, Marshall, and William, 2004, Moskal, 2003, Shepherd, 2000. It is the need for examples of these kinds of alternative assessments in practice that makes the inclusion of Waldorf methods in public and scholarly discussions important, or so we think. The first Waldorf school in the United States was the Rudolf Steiner School, founded in New York City in 1928. Thus, Waldorf education has a track record that has run parallel to the evolving policies and practices of mainstream education for almost 100 years. Waldorf educators have always stood firmly on the side of those advocating for richer curricula, multidimensional, individualized, and curriculum-embedded assessment. Many of the alternative assessment strategies recommended today in the scholarly literature can be observed in Waldorf classrooms where they have been used for decades. Waldorf education also holds firmly to its foundational understanding of the purpose of schooling, which we will discuss in Chapter 2, and which, to use phrasing often found in the outreach materials of Waldorf schools, at its heart is a commitment to support students in developing into free-thinking human beings who can impart meaning and direction into their lives. The plan of the book. The next chapter, Chapter 2, introduces the pedagogical foundations and principles of Waldorf education, which provide the rationale for teachers' methods of student assessment. We begin necessarily with the answer that Waldorf educators give to the question, what is the purpose of education? The chapter continues with a summary treatment of Waldorf pedagogical fundamentals for elementary level teaching evident in all the teaching documented in Part 2. Part 2, Chapters 3 through 7, reports our work with 9 Waldorf teachers, whose teaching and assessing we followed for 5 months. Chapter 3 describes our research methods. The next 2 chapters report how the teachers set learning goals and planned teaching, Chapter 4, and their methods of student assessment, Chapter 5. A separate chapter, Chapter 6, discusses formal reports, both those that the teacher in the case studies made and the practice of formal reporting in Waldorf education generally. It also touches briefly on the official student learning standards that were in place in the schools that participated in the case studies. In Chapter 7, we discuss Waldorf teaching and assessment methods, those we documented as well as those we understand as ideal Waldorf practice. In relation to the work of selected education scholars. In Chapter 7, we discuss Waldorf teaching and assessment methods, those we documented, as well as those we understood as ideal Waldorf practice, in relation to the work of selected education scholars. We focus on scholars whose recommendations are comparable or convergent with the Waldorf approach. At the same time, we highlight the Waldorf concept of age appropriateness, which we think is unique and which is based on a particular understanding of the developmental path of the growing child. We devote Part 3, Chapters 8 through 10, to the topic of accountability. We address the questions, why should we trust Waldorf teachers? Are their assessments valid and reliable in the absence of external measures? How can Waldorf schools be held accountable in the absence of externally applied standards and government oversight? To answer, we offer a full account of the internal mechanisms in Waldorf education, aimed at ensuring the quality of education provided by OSNA member schools. These include OSNA's path to membership for schools and teacher training institutes and the professional preparation of Waldorf teachers, Chapter 8. And three examples of OSNA-approved teacher mentoring and peer evaluation systems, Chapter 9. The latter are shown to be comparable to teacher evaluation systems that are proving effective in sectors of public education. Teacher evaluation has emerged as a central concern in education reform. This account of Waldorf practice should be a welcome contribution to discussions of this topic. Chapter 10 offers other evidence to justify confidence in the validity of Waldorf teachers' student assessments, with the caveat that a requirement by critics for the kind of proof provided by standardized test scores is incompatible with the Waldorf understanding of the function of assessment. We recapitulate our findings on Waldorf assessments, emphasize that the Waldorf understanding of age appropriateness is not the same as what non-Waldorf teachers mean when they say at grade level, and discuss school independence as a defining condition for a school to be a Waldorf school. We end by suggesting that a series of questions that could be profitably raised in light of an informed understanding of Waldorf education and its methods of assessment.